Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to An Hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo. And we have a delightful guest today, Amit Goswami, and he has a book that he's put out called How Quantum Activism Can Save Civilization. He believes firmly, as I do, that a few people can change human evolution. Amit, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure having you. And your book, now you did a movie. We talked about the movie that you were involved with last year. And you put this book together for the purpose, I think, of being even more detailed than usual. And I want my listeners to know that you're a professor emeritus of physics at the University of Oregon. And you have written a number of books. This one, it's almost as if when I was reading it, that you were really pouring a great deal of yourself into it, because it's as if you had so much you wanted to express in this, and though you had each chapter, you still had this tremendous emotion that went behind your writing. Am I correct?
I think you have got it. That's very perceptive of you. Yes, because quantum activism is something I practice. So, and I feel the pain of the world around me. And I know in my heart that we now have a new paradigm of science that can generate answers and is generating answers. And yet, partly because of the obtuseness of the society, but partly also because spiritual journalism has become so rare. Journalistic people are so scared to deal with science, which not only recognizes that the polarizations that go on in the society are solvable, but actually are scared of talking about any solutions to the problems of polarization. And this just does not help. So, my emotions are definitely involved in the writing of the book. But that doesn't mean that the solutions are not reasonable. They are indeed very, very reasonable. There are creative, intuitive, creative solutions to our problems at a very rudimentary stage of development, to be sure. People need to work with it to find workable solutions at a more detailed level. But I think the broad outlines that I have given, like spiritual economics or post-secular religion, meaningful democracy, creative and conditioning in a balanced way in education, integrative medicine. These are all very relevant, broad ideas around which you have to construct the solutions to the problems that societies all over are facing.
Yes, and we see a great deal of that. If we listen to the news for about 15 minutes, we can see a lot of what I consider a vomiting up of what isn't working, and there's no handy milk of magnesia. So it's like we are having to throw up and throw out what is not working, and because the old systems of thinking are in place, there has to be what I call warfare. And it is something that goes on because it's fighting for its life, yet it doesn't belong anymore. And we are in a quandary, I think, that is a healthy quandary, my observation, because without this, we will not be shaken from our lethargy. Without this, we are not going to be able to be open and receptive to the possibilities and options to work with.
Yeah, the crisis quandary, I completely agree with you. It is a good thing. It's a very healthy thing. It's a crisis that usually precedes every paradigm shift, every event of creativity, which requires a destructuring of the old. And, of course, people will not get the energy to destructure unless they face calamity. So you are very, very right. It is quite healthy, except, of course, at some point, it becomes destructive to people's lives, people who are not into the game of creativity so much because they're not able to, their personal situation. And so I just don't want too much suffering to come our way. And so therefore, it probably is inevitable that certain suffering will have to come, otherwise will just not master enough energy, even for a few people, to solve the problem. But it is also true, though, that that if we could avoid some of the suffering, it would be nice.
I could always
make that optimistic wish, can't I?
Oh, without question. Now, there's a few comments that I want to mention on your book. One, I liked your statement where you said God does not play with dice. I really like that. And also that in dealing with artificial intelligence, you cannot compute intuitive thought, which I agree with quite strongly. Also, the world of consciousness is a multi-universe.
Yeah.
Now, this is something that is coming more and more to the forefront,
yeah,
and it's caused a rift in the world of science, which is nothing new. I mean, after all, Copernicus caused a rift when he came up with his concepts.
Right.
So you have this that happens, and science, because of technology, is suddenly having these ahas. A lot of people talked about a long time ago, and they said, excuse me, what do you mean this is an aha? Well, every generation has to go through, I think, its aha stage. But you talk about a multiverse.
Right.
Explain that.
Well, because quantum physics look at possibilities, objects as possibilities. And so this basic idea of scientific materialism, that the matter is the only thing that is now possible to contest. Because if the world consists of possibilities, then the question comes, what makes possibilities, what transforms possibilities into actual events of our experience? And it turns out that material interactions just cannot do it. So if material interactions cannot do it, we need the introduction of non-material interaction, non-material causal efficacy. And that non-material causality has to come from consciousness, which has to be introduced not as a dual partner, because that too leads to the paradox of dualism. How do the two dual partners, non-material and material, interact? So and that problem, dualism problem, has existed with us 400 years, and there was no solution, and that's how we got into materialism, because materialists thought that who needs the mind? We just let's declare that there is only matter. But the problem is quantum physics. Quantum physics says world is possibility. World of matter also is possibility. So what makes possibility into actuality? Material interactions cannot do it. There has to be another interaction, so you have to introduce consciousness into the picture. So how do you introduce consciousness? So the idea is that consciousness has to be the ground of being, but matter cannot be separate from it. If matter is separate from it, then again, dualism. So how can matter be separate from it? Yes, matter can, because matter is nothing but possibilities, says quantum physics. So the possibilities can be possibilities of consciousness. Then consciousness acts on matter by choosing among the possible facets, the one facet that it will materialize, that it will manifest in a particular experience. So in this way, a very grave paradox that has baffled us for decades can be solved. And this is then beginning of the new paradigm that you are looking at, because if matter consists of a possible world within consciousness, then other worlds of experience can also be looked upon as possibilities of consciousness to choose from. Because if consciousness is the ground of being, then matter is one compartment that we experience in the sensory experiences. But there is another compartment of meaning that we experience as thinking, another compartment of feeling that we, another compartment of vital energies that we experience as feeling, and another compartment of archetypes that we intuit. So in this way, all the human experiences that Carl Jung has codified in modern times, sensing, feeling, thinking, and intuiting, can all be included into one package of four universes within consciousness that we can call a multiverse.
You state in your book, you can't change the world without changing yourself. You have to evolve yourself first by looking inward, and then the outer world will take care of itself. I can remember hearing equivalent statements like that when I was a little girl. And yet that is not really something that is supported by many of societal paradigms.
Donna, if I can correct you a little bit, I quoted that as what mystics say. I myself think that it is possible to change ourselves and the world simultaneously.
Aha, thank you for the correction. I appreciate that.
Good. I'm glad because you're right. I mean, that takes us off the tangent, because if we think that, then we negate the world, and that is not the right thing to do at this time of our history, at this stage of our evolution. We have to become involved more in the world. When we didn't understand spirituality very well, as in the olden days, people proceeded blindly, and at that time it seemed like the only way they could make breakthroughs in consciousness is to not worry about the external world, for which they had very little answers or understanding. Let's face it, this materialist science, although we are now getting out of that kind of thinking, has given us wonderful insights into how the physical world works, has given us wonderful control over part of nature which we needed badly.
Mm-hmm.
Because the conditions of life was very difficult in the olden days. Now it has become better, certainly. And of course, this materialist science is also limited, so you have to go to the next stage of science, no doubt about it. But certainly, we are not going to be able to go back, nor there is any necessity to go back to spiritual societies of the past. They, too, are not devoid of their own difficulties. Namely, they could never find comfortable ways to live with nature. Now we have comfortable ways to live with nature, but of course it also is abusing nature.
Mm-hmm.
So what
mm-hmm.
the new challenge is to keep some of these comfortable ways to live with nature, but in harmony with nature. And the new paradigm is able to do that. It is showing us ways in which we can live which will allow us to not destroy nature, but be comfortable with it and be in harmony with it.
I agree. And I think that has a strong contribution to the spirituality of the individual.
Absolutely.
Because they realize that they're not just a person, that they're interconnected with everything that is on this planet and elsewhere, and that there is that awareness that they have. I think so many times people think they're supposed to sit on a rock somewhere, chanting, and then this is the way life is. But I agree with you. We have to participate in life. We are going to need to take on the responsibility of ourselves, and I know so many of my listeners are of that mindset, and that's something that it distresses them many times when they look at what's going on outside of the world that they try so carefully to be cognizant of, because you have to be awake. You can't be asleep. You can't sleepwalk. You have to keep your eyes open. You have to stay awake.
Right.
And it is a challenge, because it's going against many things that have been taken for granted and assumptions, and now we're reaching a point where we have to say, excuse me, is this what I really should be doing? So there is a big, big shift that I think is evolving, has been evolving for a number of years, but it's picking up momentum because people are waking up out of what I feel is a very deep mental sleep.
Yeah.
And they're shaking themselves and they're going, wait a minute, this isn't the way it was when I went to sleep. I don't like what I'm seeing. What do I do?
Yeah, yes. And this is what quantum activism is about. And exactly the question that people are asking is not only, what to do, but what can I do specifically? And, and the answer quantum physics is giving that, look, we just have to be very creative. We have to understand creativity deeper and engage in it. We have to understand the archetypes better, which is the objective of creativity, to investigate the archetypes. Somebody was telling me that some universities are not even allowing the use of the word archetype in their teachings anymore because that scares them. But of course, why are we creative? We are creative to investigate the archetype and, in fact, represent them in our midst in the form of products of creativity and in the form of our own living. We want to represent the archetypes of love, goodness in our life. If we don't do that, societies fall apart like it did in the economic meltdown that took place in 2007-2008. So we need the archetypal values to be reestablished in the society. It won't happen until we recognize, A, that we have quantum possibilities to choose from, we have the power to choose, and we can be creative in our choice, and we can do it with love.
You had a statement in your book, where you, two of them that I was really interested in. Modern science was created in an environment of antagonism between science and Christianity, which historically, that you can check in any history book if you read it. And then you talk about narrow-minded squabbles with Christianity just as the world's pop religions go on with their squabbles. I really like that because we have stuff going on in the world today that has, using your word, an archetype that doesn't belong anymore. It's like the old gods and goddesses of Greece and Rome, Jove and whoever else you want to come up with, and there's relationships with that that have value. But we went past that, and now we're breaking forth into new paradigms. And it's really tough when you see people saying it's better for us to destroy than, we've got to go out and beat everybody up because our way is the only way. You wonder if the human being will ever reach a point where it will get past that stupidity.
Well, we won't until, of course, we transform a little bit. So I think the present crisis, as you said, it's a positive thing. And the reason it's a positive thing is that the present crisis will really shift our gears to a new worldview, which includes both spirituality and materiality. And by doing that, it will allow us to live in a way that can then avoid these polarizations that get us into problems. Because the point that we are not moving forward right now is really quite simple. The old world lives on in terms of we hanker for those values that materialism is giving up on. Some of us are very desirous of reestablishing the old values of spiritual societies. This is the nerve of the people that the Tea Partiers, Republicans, they touch, because Republicans and Tea Party politicians give lip service to values that touch the heart of 50% of Americans right now. Then you have the Democrats who are more and more siding with the materialist scientists, and some of them are openly saying that they are atheists, but implicitly most Democrats are atheists today, at least in their behavior. They don't value values anymore. So the distinction between the two sets of people becomes very clear. One is people with values, but they want the old world to be back, which is a world of hierarchies where democracy doesn't really exist or has no need for, where you do what other people tell you to do, where rich and poor are very different in their power. Only the rich has power to change or power to process meaning. Poor doesn't go anywhere. Their life is just as obedient servants of the rich. And that's one set. That's the Republican mindset. Take the world towards that. And then the Democratic mindset, which doesn't believe in values, and yet they don't like hierarchies, and they want the society to move on the way that it has been moving, which is towards some sort of democracy and not so much difference between poor and rich people. So it's a very strange situation. I mean, on one hand, on one criterion, Republicans are right because they value values. On the other criterion, Democrats are right because they value creativity and progressivity. So it's a very difficult situation unless you integrate. And what I'm saying is that it's an affront between the old spirituality, old religion, Christianity, if you will, and new materiality, which is the materialist science. Unless we integrate them, the polarization will never be resolved. And that is why the new worldview, based on quantum physics, is primacy of consciousness. It's right thinking. Right thinking means accepting the new worldview and establishing in our thoughts unequivocally that this is the right way of thinking. If we do that, then automatically the values are valued once again. And we also move towards progress because we accept evolution. The Republicans, the biggest shortcoming of that kind of thinking is that one doesn't believe in evolution, and therefore one doesn't believe that it is important to be creative and bring these values into our lives rather than believe in the values just as lip service.
You have a statement in your book, feminist anthropologists call the stage of evolution of the vital mind the golden age, and you strongly agree with that. Many of the individuals that I have encountered call it the age of the goddess that's beginning to come back, where the feminine is coming back, the intuitive, the creativity you're talking about, the essence of, if you will, make love, not war. And I'm being a little flippant with that, but it is an attitude where we need to bring things into balance. And you cover, historically, quite an interesting aspect regarding men and women and the variables that ended up creating the male hierarchy, and now things are sort of going into a different direction. You also have the fact, and you brought this up more than once, about creativity, making it the center of your life. And you have here thinking about creativity, asking questions. Your questions are firefly glimpses of the soul calling you. Do you hear the lapping of possibility waves on the shore of your mind? Then look through the quantum window. Face to face with your original self, the quantum leap will take you by surprise. In your book, and there's so much in your book that we wouldn't possibly be able to cover in our time together. But I was impressed with some of the meditation exercises that you put together for people in here, because it seems to enable people to take charge of their own space and then move forward.
Yes. Yes, and this is the best news of the new paradigm, that the new paradigm not only tells us how to think properly, namely the right worldview, which is now being established by both theory and experimental data, by the way, that's very good data in favor of the new science, but the new science also gives us strong guidelines of how to live. if we could lift these quantum principles, you know, the main quantum principles are very easy to recognize. Quantum physics says the world is possibility, which means that we have freedom to choose among these possibilities and bring the manifest world. Except the caveat, of course, is that we can choose only when we are in non-local consciousness, not in the local individuality of the ego. And, of course, the caveat also is that the choice is creative, and creative choices come with the discontinuity of our normal ego experience. So these ideas of non-locality and discontinuity are ideas that we don't normally engage in, although today it just so happens the movement of consciousness is such that non-local experiences such as telepathy and precognition is becoming quite common. So they're not as foreign to us as they used to be, which is a good sign. And likewise, creativity is something that everybody talks about, at least. What it involves is not so well known, and also we are very stuck with the materialist worldview, which does not give a very good model for thinking about creativity. In fact, does not honor even the basic aspects of the creative process, because it can't. So this paucity of the worldview, paucity of our thinking, causes a lot of consternation about our trust in what we need to do in order to be creative. But, you know, if you are ready to be a quantum activist, we can provide you with such good model of creativity that quantum physics generates that you can actually learn creativity. You can learn how to engage in creative process. And these meditations that you liked, I'm really delighted, Donna, they are some of the exercises that one can do about accessing quantum consciousness, which is the main thing. If we can access quantum consciousness regularly, we can be creative, every one of us.
Well, I just think your exercises are very good, and I really appreciate a lot of the comments that you made about how business is changing. You have suggestions in here so that those who are in business are going to feel like they have a chance, that they don't have to give up the aspect of being responsible, productive people and supporting the environments that we really want. We don't want to go back to what you call the good old days, because those weren't such good old
days.
They were hideous. People did not
have people. Yes.
Yeah, and they people died at a very early age. Disease was rampant. The medical profession was pathetic. It was literally non-existent. And there were so many things that...
Even for the wealthy, you know, the funny thing, even for the wealthy people, the only fact they might have enjoyed is their power over other people.
Mm-hmm.
But in truth, what kind of comfort level was there for the wealthy people? They were also dying at a very early age because the life expectancy was just low for everyone. The wealthy people, you know, I often say that today, even the sometimes the poorest of the poor in our country lives in more comfort than the wealthy people of the olden days. Have you looked at the museum pieces of olden day thrones? You know how uncomfortable they were? And today everybody has the ability of sitting in a sofa, which is nice and comfortable. We forget these things.
Absolutely. Now, I do want my listeners to know that they can go to your website, www.amitgoswami.org, and find out more information. There's a wonderful movie that was put out last year, and again, it's A-M-I-T-G-O-S-W-A-M-I. Amit, what would you like to leave my audience with in the way of a thought and inspiration for them to carry around this day?
Well, that's easy, because I really believe that if you are one of the, if you envision to be one of the few million people that Rupert Sheldrake and I and others think are enough to affect our evolution, hasten our evolution enough to come out of this crisis conditions that we have created, then please join us. Become a quantum activist. All it means is that these quantum principles that we talked about, downward causation, non-locality, discontinuity, creativity, interconnectedness, you decide to live with these things make these things real in your living. And while you do that, you also concentrate on the problem of finding the right livelihood, not only for yourself, but for others. And when you do that, you will want to change some of the aspects of society that has been very corrupted by scientific materialism. For example, the way we practice economics that brings this horrendous calamities like this recent meltdown. We can avoid that by developing a spiritual economics. We can really bring the healthcare down by acknowledging vital energy medicine and mind-body healing and so forth. We can go beyond this current polarization by considering the separation of spirituality and religion, by going into post-secularism. We can bring creativity in our schools. So there are these things that we can do as activists. We have to be activists because the conventional paradigm is very entrenched. People are not going to give up their practice of scientific materialism any more than the church was willing to give up the old Christian worldview 400 years ago. So we have some work to do, and I would like you to love for you to join our work.
Well, the invitation is there, and I'm sure there are those that are listening that would be happy to accept it, because I know 1 + 1 + 1 + 1 + 1 makes a difference, and you keep adding just the one, and before you know it, you are infinite. There is no limit to the possibilities of change. This Amit Goswami, my guest, How Quantum Activism Can Save Civilization. A few people can change human evolution, and you might be one of them. Amit, thank you very much for being with me today. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Thank you, Donna.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open. Number to call worldwide is 888-815-9756. If you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, and I would be delighted to do exactly that. All I need from you, if you're a first-time listener and never called in, I need your first name or your initial. And then after that, I also like to know where you're calling from, of course. Just sit back, relax, let me tell you what I perceive, and then, of course, you're welcome to ask a question about anything that you like. Quickly, I want to remind those of you in the Pacific Northwest that I will be appearing at the Emerald Spiral Expo on March 26th. That's a Saturday. This is a fabulous one-day event. It is in Kent, the city of Kent, Washington, at Kent Commons. If you want to find out directions and hours, etc., go to emeraldspiral.com. I will have a booth there. I also will be bringing the books with me. Ah, yes, my library. This is the time of the year when I purge it and I get rid of a lot of books because I have to make room for new books. My goodness, I think I've got them in every single room. My house is almost like a library with all the interviews that I do. There's just so many talented people, so many wonderful points of information and learning. So eventually I have to clear out some books to make room for new ones. So this is an opportunity if you want to come out, see me, and also then to look at some of the things that I bring out for your reading pleasure as well. I wanted to share a little bit of history with you. Have you ever heard of John Paul Jones? Ah, yes. He was a Revolutionary War hero, also the founding father of the United States Navy. Now, in 1792, he died of kidney disease and bronchial pneumonia. He died in Paris. Now, he was considered one of the greatest heroes of the American Revolution, but that didn't make too much difference when he died. Rather than to pay his, should ship his body back to the U.S. for burial, the American ambassador to France instructed Jones's landlord to bury him as privately as possible and with the least amount of expense. If you think people are cheap today, that's nothing new with the human race. Now, in 1899, remember, he died in 1792. In 1899, 107 years later, another U.S. ambassador to France, his name was Horace Potter, became obsessed with locating John Paul Jones' grave. He wanted to return this man's remains to the United States for a proper burial. Now, it took him 6 years to find out about what happened to John Paul Jones when he died in 1792. Well, he managed to figure out that Jones was buried in a cemetery for Protestants. Guess what happened? Well, decades earlier, the cemetery had been totally abandoned, became a valuable piece of real estate, and an entire neighborhood was built right on top of the cemetery. Now, finding out that Jones had been buried in a lead casket, Porter hired a digging party to tunnel under the neighborhood and search for a lead casket. And, of course, there were hundreds of bodies here, hundreds of bodies. They were rotting. A lot of them had been in wooden caskets. Those were rotting. But they found three lead coffins. And John Paul Jones was in the third one that they opened. Now, what was amazing about this is that his body was so well preserved, it was identified by comparing its face to military medals that had been inscribed with John Paul Jones' likeness. Now, what occurred is an American naval squadron returned him to the U.S. Naval Academy in July of 1905, where the body was stored under a staircase in a dormitory for 7 more years, until Congress finally appropriated enough money to build a permanent crypt. Gracious. Isn't history fascinating? All kinds of things that we have no idea about, that we're never taught in school, but somewhere somebody has a curiosity and a desire to change something, move something forward. And that's what we were talking about in the discussion we were having earlier with Amit Goswami. These are things that create change. But dear John Paul Jones, it took a while to take care of that. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Phone lines are open, 888-815-9756. Well, let me let you know what we've got going on for the rest of this week. It's a dynamic week. Tomorrow, we are going to be talking about the history of the Dakota Sioux, specifically a very special man whose name is Gray Wolf. He and Crazy Horse were raised together. Now, this book is called A Good Day to Die. Robert H. Barton is the man that I am going to be interviewing. His wife, Dell, was related to Grey Wolf, and she had the opportunity to spend 6 months with him as a young adult, and she recorded his story, and that's what this is all about. She passed away, and they're now putting the book out in an e-book format so people can have access to it. It is an incredible read. I was just mesmerized by the whole publication. It's absolutely awesome. Then on Thursday, we're going to be talking with Ken Roshan, and we're going to be discussing two things. One is his amazing children's book, Making Friends Around the World. He has, I think it's 7 to 10 languages. I'd have to have the book in front of me to recall it exactly. But he has 7 to 10 languages expressed in a way that children will identify with, and it's a wonderful way to bring a cultural blending of consciousness and mind. And then he also has an excellent book on networking. So we're going to be talking about those two subjects tomorrow. And then on Friday, we'll be talking with Naheed Sewell, and it's about her book, The Ruby Tear Catcher. Now, she's Muslim. This book is power-packed. This is a book based on truth, but written in the form of fiction. I'm telling you, it is amazing. So we have just got a great lineup this week. I hope you'll make a note. If you ever wonder about the people that are coming up on the show, go in to Station 1. Right here at BBS, go into Donna Sebo's show and click on the show information, and you'll find a little write-up about every single guest that's going to be coming up. So remember, you can always go in there and check, but this is really quite a dynamic week, so I'm looking forward to share all these good things with you. Now, I wanted to give you some information about how the medical industry on its own, and mostly because of pressure from the consumer, because the consumer of these medical treatments is beginning to, and has been actually for quite a while, seeking out alternative methods of treatment. So allopathic medicine is being forced to change because people are saying, wait a minute, we're looking at other options. And it's a good change. It really is a good change. But it takes time for it to go through a system because you have to have exposure to certain things, and it's very difficult to get past certain paradigms. Well, what if you could use your immune system to destroy cancer cells and totally bypass chemo and radiation? I've said before, chemotherapy and radiation are going to be considered absolutely barbaric within a very short period of time. But as with all things, belief systems sometimes fall into a very, I don't know that that's possible, category. Well, apparently there is some development regarding a vaccine. Now, it's called Provenge, P-R-O-V-E-N-G-E. Now, the principle behind this vaccine was used to treat prostate cancer, and it was approved by the FDA last year. Now, the studies they've done so far, and all of those people participating in the study, the men, had advanced prostate cancer. Now, they lived an extra 4.5 months on average, which doesn't seem like very much, but there were those that got an extra 3 years. Now, they said what was so important about this is that the side effects were minimal. The results, well, they haven't got them perfect yet. The cost is high, more than $90,000 for a full round of treatment. But it's still, in the eyes of those in the medical field, a remarkable development. Now, when the vaccine was approved, the Deputy Chief Medical Officer for the American Cancer Society, his name is Lynn Lichtenfeld, he's a physician, said it is a positive step forward because this vaccine, even though it's nowhere near perfect, provided some evidence that the immune system can be stimulated to fight cancer. Now, they're already looking at another kind of vaccine or a second cancer treatment vaccine that is aimed at a certain type of lymphoma. You know, there are so many things that we need to be alert to and aware of. And there are so many cultures that learned about how you can work with the body to keep cancer at bay. The reality is, when we hear the term cancer, we seem to think it's one thing. It isn't. There are literally thousands of cancers that are out there. But you shouldn't be afraid. You should learn how to educate yourself, take care of yourself, take care of your body, read, research, and be aware of the fact that the body is an incredible healing machine. But we have to support it. We have to take care of it. We have to appreciate it so that it can do its job properly. And there's some other information on tests that I've got, but I'll share that with you another time. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more good things to share. And don't forget, you can give me a buzz at 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you want to chat, 888-815-9756. If you're like me, many times you will be able to acknowledge that you have certain traits that are positive, but you also have some that are negative. They're not so hot. Well, I came across an interesting study. Ah, yes, there are always these studies going on. People that have nothing else to do, they come up with all kinds of inventive ways to explore the human mind and personality. Well, how many times do we get upset with ourselves because we procrastinate, or we want everything absolutely perfect, or we can't make decisions? Well, let me give you some tips. Then this comes from Peter D. Harms, who's with the University of Nebraska. He said, you know, negative traits can have a positive side to them. Stubbornness, for example, that can have, well, a not so positive side. We all have that. I'm known for being stubborn about certain things, but that's not necessarily a disadvantage. In my mind's view, every aspect that is positive also has a negative side to it. It just seems to be that kind of a situation in life as it is. So it's up to us to be able to utilize it in a positive way. But let's talk about stubbornness. Well, according to Peter, he said, if you have a stubborn streak, you really are an inventive trailblazer. Now, what do we associate with stubbornness? Someone may be doing the same thing over and over and over again. In reality, stubbornness often goes hand in hand with inventiveness. Those people that are creative can be absolutely persistent about trying to find solutions. They never give up and will try all kinds of ways to solve a problem until the mission is accomplished. So your particular brand of persistence is also a key trait of the most successful entrepreneurs. You're fiercely independent, like to work alone, and you're willing to put in long hours necessary to getting things done. So stubbornness has a strength to it as well as a negative. The negative side would be as if you keep doing the same thing over and over again and get the same results, and you're not willing to change that. Okay. Well, what if you're indecisive? It's okay. You are going to be able to develop leadership skills. Indecisiveness, they found in research, helps you to develop skills needed to be just that, a good leader. The trait, they find, is because people are really thinking a lot about what their options are. They like to check out every option possible in their head before they actually do anything. Now, If you use this wisely, your forethought will train your brain to keep running through the what-ifs until you can arrive at the right decision almost instantly. So you learn how to be adaptable. Your brain will store your experiences and your learning. And before you know it, you're going to be so adaptable and be able to be such a good problem solver that people will think this has just been a part of you all your life, but you've had to go through the learning curve. Well, procrastination. Oh, for heaven's sakes, how many times do we all deal with that? I do. Well, according to Peter Harms, you're fostering your creativity. People who are artistic tend to procrastinate more, maybe, than someone who's inclined to be a scientist or an accountant. Because if you're creative, there's the inspiration side. Sometimes that's not right there when you want it. So, if you find you get your best work done at the last minute, just before a deadline is about to crash in on you, you probably can be extremely innovative and a bit of a risk taker. And procrastination, they found through the research, actually helped push the best ideas to the forefront. After all, when you're rushing to get something done under the wire, your focus sharpens and self-doubt drops away. Now, what about perfectionism? Oh, boy. That can really be rather hairy. Being self-critical, it can cause unbelievable stress and misery. However, do you know what they found? They found that people that were really into having everything just right, they didn't seem to get as many chronic diseases like diabetes. It's because you're oriented towards detail. Your detail-oriented nature helps you to create healthy routines and follow treatment plans. And you're internally motivated. The biggest critic you have is yourself. You tend to have real strong willpower, much more so than folks that want to just please everybody. Really interesting research here. And if you have trouble saying no, oh, that can be a big one. Well, apparently you're an idealist. Even though you might wish you were more assertive, there's a lot of pluses to being open to saying yes. Why? Because you are open-minded and you have a very youthful attitude. You know, if you have someone like a boss that says, gee, I want you to take on this last-minute project, or you've got a friend who's invited you out of town, it's something you seem to go with. It makes you more successful, because you're one of those people who shows a more positive attitude, and you're twice as likely to succeed in whatever you go after, whether it's a career or some other special aspiration. I thought that was an interesting aspect of research, giving a perspective about how something that can be a positive, or let me reverse that, what you might think could be a negative, has the positive side to it. This is Donna Sebo, and I know we've just got a little bit of time here, and I thought, okay, I think I want to share with you just a little bit of a quick chocolate raspberry dessert pizza. Oh, yeah. How would you like to work with just 3 ingredients? Oh, yes. Oh, I know. You're thinking, oh, Donna, that's fattening. Try this one. Really easy. You take a reduced fat whole wheat flour tortilla. It's going to be a 7-inch diameter. Oh, a tablespoon plus a teaspoon of chocolate fudge sauce. That's right. And a cup of fresh raspberries. All right, this is how simple it is. You preheat your oven to 400 degrees. Put your tortilla on a nonstick baking sheet. You bake it 3 to 4 minutes per side. It's going to get nice and crispy. Now, if air bubbles form while it's baking, just poke them with a fork or a toothpick, and then with a spatula oven, then just press the air out. You put it on your serving plate. You spread 1 tablespoon of fudge sauce evenly over the tortilla, leaving about a 1/2 inch of a border, and arrange your raspberries over the hot chocolate. I warm the chocolate first. And then the remaining chocolate sauce that you have, drizzle it over your raspberries, and then serve immediately. Yum! I thought that would make your day. Nothing like chocolate to end the show with. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a magnificent day. Tomorrow, it's the Dakota Sioux. Hope you can join me. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.